Information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight, we care.
Appear to border
and it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nine you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
The shout rings out in the Portland sky. PRA, Revere Radio, it's episode 70 of Media Monarchy. That's right, my friends. It's episode 70 of Media Monarchy. My name is James. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, PRA Radio, RevereRadio.info. Tons to go over in this 70th episode. Of course, it's the 40th anniversary, the assassination of MLK. But we got John Yoo, Oliver Stone, Border Drones, Digital Angel, Fusion Centers, and the Animal RFID. We got Jesse Ventura, Mukasey, Barbara and Ted Olson making some phone calls, Arlen Single Bullet Specter, DEA, FBI, CIA, corruption, and tons more. It's episode 70, April 4th, 2008. MediaMonarchy.com.
He freed a lot of people, but it seems good they die young. You know, I just looked around and he's gone. Anybody here seen my old friend John? He freed a lot of people, but it seemed the good they die young. I just looked around and he's and John.
and John, and welcome once again, my friends, to MediaMonarchy.com. It's episode 70, and it's April 4th, 2008. My name's James. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and the Revere Radio Network, revereradio.info. And you can, of course, hit me up on MySpace, Dig, YouTube, and Yahoo with Media Monarchy as your keyword. And I implore you, especially this time, to go get the podcast at radioforall.net and archive.org. Had some technical difficulties at the PRA studios, so I'm back in my home joint recording the show. Going to try and do it in real time, keep to the 2 hours, forcing myself to do it at home, and we're going to see how it goes, my friends. Of course, 40th anniversary of the death of Martin Luther King. Many, many, many reports and retrospectives and things like that. Going to try and give you a slightly different perspective and get into a couple things. But of course, starting it off with the general big picture, U.S. to mark 40th anniversary of King's slaying Friday. This is Deutsche Press Agency, monstersandcritics.com. The Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee, where he was shot 40 years ago, has been turned into the National Civil Rights Museum. His birthday has become a national holiday, and every U.S. school child and adult knows his name. On Friday, April 4th, the United States will mark the 40th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., the civil rights leader who shook the country out of its apartheid past and led one of the country's most historic social movements ever. King was struck down by a sniper at age 39 as he stepped onto a balcony at the Lorraine Hotel for a breath of air during a labor strike in Memphis. His assassin, James Earl Ray, a white man obsessed with hatred for blacks, who hoped he'd be paid by segregationists for his deed, had stalked MLK from city to city across the Deep South until he had his chance. He was convicted and died in jail in 1998. Now, Civil Rights, National Civil Rights Museum, you can hit up civilrightsmuseum.org, and you can hit up, of course, the Wikipedia entry, but it's also interesting to note, of course, that the King family doesn't believe that James Earl Ray was the assassin. And the authority to point to is Dr. William Pepper and all his work on not only MLK, but in the conspiracy world in general. But if we now hit up BBC, thousands do at King anniversary. Thousands of people are expected to gather in the U.S. city of Memphis to mark the 40 years since the death of civil rights leader Martin Luther King. Crowds will converge on the Lorraine Motel where he was shot. Presidential hopefuls John McCain and Hillary Clinton are expected to attend, but not Mrs. Clinton's Democratic rival Barack Obama. Correspondents say Dr. King's campaign for equal rights by nonviolent means inspired millions around the world. And of course, his I Have a Dream speech is considered among the greatest ever made. Here's one of the other parts. You probably know a little bit of this, but of course, as time goes by, more things and more things leak out. So CNN, they have a lot. I think they have a special, so they've got all their coverage up on CNN.com. But the one I'm hitting is FBI tracked King's every move.
I have a dream today.
Dr. King's electrifying speech at the March on Washington in August of 1963 had made him the movement's hero. It also made him the FBI's nightmare, according to the official paper trail.
Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
We regard Martin Luther King to be the most dangerous Negro leader in the country.
They called him in one of the FBI memos released later, the most dangerous Negro.
I think that's probably a compliment.
Andrew Young, one of King's closest advisors, says the inner circle was very much aware that the government was spying on them.
I mean, we saw the FBI. They were not very subtle. I mean, they all dressed alike with little skinny ties and crew cuts for the most part.
In October of 1963, Robert Kennedy signed off on wiretaps. Atlanta agents broke into Dr. King's home and office to install them.
Did you know the FBI was tapping your phones?
Oh, yeah.
You assumed it or you knew it?
No, we knew it.
Nothing was sacred. Young remembers how fellow minister Ralph Abernathy discovered an FBI bug while speaking at an Alabama church.
And he said, "Look here." And he took the little microphone out and he put it up on top of the pulpit. And he said, "Little doohickey, I want you to tell President Johnson, and I want you to tell J. Edgar Hoover, I want you to tell George Wallace, I want you to tell everybody that no matter what they think, we are going to be free. And the whole church just cheered.
But there were no cheers when FBI surveillance caught Dr. King in an embarrassing moment. It was 1964 at the Willard Hotel in Washington, D.C.
A bunch of guys were in the room clowning, and they were having a very good time. And then it quieted down, and someone was left in the room and was recorded in the act of sexual intercourse. And they assumed it was Dr. King.
So the FBI took it one more nasty step. When Dr. King won the Nobel Prize, the FBI mailed an anonymous package to Dr. King's office. On it, highlights from the sex tapes with an ominous note.
You are a colossal fraud and an evil, vicious one at that. The American public will know you for what you are, an evil, abnormal beast. King, you are done.
The implication was that this was supposed to provoke him to suicide.
Yet King was unmoved by the FBI's truly dirty tricks.
He saw this as part of his life, this is what he would have to live for the rest of his life.
So that's a little bit of salacious FBI spy details coming, like I said, from CNN. Now, you can hit up, there's a site called AmericanRhetoric.com that is a cool place that has all kinds of historical speeches and things, and you can download the audio or watch the video. And so they have a speech up there called I've Been to the Mountaintop. Now we're backtracking through this. Something, a little bit of synchronicity happened about a week ago. I downloaded something from ConspiracyCentral.net. I think it's a BBC show. I don't have it on the website, but it's Dispatches is the name of it, and it's under the label Coca-Cola and Nazi Sponsorship. So in watching this, there was something else that I didn't know about Martin Luther King.
Give Coca-Cola's empire a good shake, and it's not just the odd Nazi that comes tumbling out. Just down the road in Atlanta is Auburn Avenue, the heart of the civil rights movement, a movement Coca-Cola has a troubled history with. I'm outside the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, which is the church that Martin Luther King Jr. used to co-pastor with his father. And in fact, you can hear his speeches being played on a public address system just across the way on this little plaza. In fact, in the last speech that Martin Luther King made, the day before he was killed, on the 4th of April, 1968, Martin Luther King made this amazing speech. And in it, he actually called for a boycott of the Coca-Cola company, and we're going to find out why.
Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. traveled to Memphis to back a boycott of companies deemed to be discriminating against black workers. Here, he made one of his most iconic speeches, known as I Have Been to the Mountaintop.
Always anchor our external direct action. So as a result of this, we're asking you tonight to go out and tell your neighbors not to buy Coca-Cola in Memphis.
One of the people carrying on King's work is Reverend Joseph Lowry, his friend and co-founder of the civil rights movement. He is so revered in Atlanta, the boulevard we're driving down is named after him. He explains the boycott of Coca-Cola.
In Atlanta, we had engaged in activities and protests against Coca-Cola, which had considerable business support from the black community. They did not hire blacks in important, gainful positions. The people in charge of the transactions were always white. The people who did the heavy work were always black. Their income was considerably lower.
Coca-Cola now says it is anti-discrimination on the basis of race, sex, color, national or social origin. So the boycott worked. Or was it really that easy?
One more reason to admire Martin Luther King. Now, as I mentioned, William Pepper, his book, An Act of State, The Execution of Martin Luther King came out in 2003, and there's lots of good videos of him basically giving his speeches about the assassination of MLK. So I'll point you there, and there's, of course, links and copious things to read about James Earl Ray and the MLK assassination. So I won't belabor it anymore, so we're going to move on. To thinkprogress.org, Pentagon wants students' directories. The Army Times reports that the Pentagon has announced a new Get Tough policy with colleges and universities that interfere with the work of military recruiters and Reserve Officer Training Corps programs. That's ROTC. Under rules that will take effect April 28th, defense officials said they want the exact same access to student directories that is provided to all other prospective employers. Students can opt out of having their info turned over to the military only if they opt out of having their information provided to all other recruiters. But schools cannot have policies that exclude only the military, defense officials said in a March 28th notice of the new policy in the Federal Register. This new policy is in part the result of the 2006 U.S. Supreme Court decision that upheld the federal government's ability to use funding as a means of forcing equal access for military recruiters and ROTC units on campus. And I link over to that whole report from armytimes.com, but I ain't gonna read it. If we hit dangerroom.com, Cheney opposed chemical weapons convention. Vice President Dick Cheney opposed the ratification of a treaty banning the use of chemical weapons, this now shown by a recently unearthed letter. 183 countries pledged never to develop, produce, otherwise acquire, stockpile, or retain chemical weapons or transfer directly or indirectly chemical weapons to anyone under the Chemical Weapons Convention put into effect in 1997. But in a letter dated April 8, 1997, then Halliburton CEO Darth Cheney told Senator Jesse Helms, then chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, that it would be a mistake for America to join the convention. Those nations most likely to comply with the Chemical Weapons Convention are not likely to ever constitute a military threat to the U.S. The governments we should be concerned about are likely to cheat on the convention, even if they do participate, reads the letter published by the Federation of American Scientists, and they post it up, and you can download the PDFs of all of it. The CWC was ratified by the Senate that same month. And since then, Albania, Libya, Russia, the U.S., and India have declared over 71,000 metric tons of chemical weapons stockpiles and destroyed about a third of them. Of course, how they destroy them is the worrying part. But, like I said, you can follow that down and check out up on FAS.org, document of the day. Cheney opposes CWC, and they basically reproduce the letter, like I said, in PDF form. Now, it's Dirty John Yoo. Fucking scumbag John Yoo. The AP. Pentagon releases memo on harsh tactics. The Pentagon on Tuesday, April Fool's Day, I believe, made public a now defunct legal memo that approved the use of harsh interrogation techniques against terror suspects, saying that President Bush's wartime authority trumps any international ban on torture. The Justice Department memo dated March 14, 2003 outlines legal justification for military interrogators to use harsh tactics against Al-Qaeda and Taliban detainees overseas, so long as they did not specifically intend to torture their captors. Even so, the memo noted the President's wartime powers commander-in-chief would not be limited by the UN treaties against torture. Our previous opinions make clear that customary international law is not federal law and that the president is free to override it at his discretion, said the memo written by John Yoo, who was then Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Legal Counsel. And we can hit up the Washington Post. They go into it. Memo: laws didn't apply to interrogators. And of course, that's a little more copious. And if we jump back to the day after Christmas, 2005, again, the Washington Post. Scholar stands by post-9/11 writings on torture, domestic eavesdropping. John Yoo knows the epithets of the libertarians, the liberals, and the lefties. Widely considered the intellectual architect of the most dramatic assertion of White House power since the Nixon era, he has seen constitutional scholars skewer his reasoning and students call for his ouster from the University of California at Berkeley. civil liberties advocates were appalled by a memo he helped draft on torture. And that one goes on. Now, however, let's jump to September 19th, 2006. Paul Joseph Watson writes, Bush desperate to legislate Mengele-style torture. The Bush administration's desperation to legitimize and legislate torture in the face of revolt from the Congress, the Senate, and even Colin Powell is an attempt to rescue the need to have a constant supply of phony intelligence obtained from torture to justify the war on terror. While the real horror of how the administration advocates sexually mutilating children under the same legal definition remains hidden from the U.S. public. A large portion of Americans still support the use of rendition and pressure because they are told that the information obtained from such methods protects them from terrorists. Not only is that information crude, unreliable, and often misleading, but the suffering inflicted on the victims is horror show in comparison to the milquetoast edited version presented via the media. The philosophy of the Bush administration's approach to torture is encapsulated by John Torture You, professor, I should say it's Y-O-O, John Y-O-O, John Yu, professor of law at Berkeley, co-author of the Patriot Act, and author of Torture Memos, and White House advisor. So, during a December 1st debate in Chicago with Notre Dame professor and international human rights scholar Doug Cassell, John Yu gave the green light for the scope of torture to legally include sexual torture of infants. Now, from a different meeting, the audio is a little bad, but someone else confronted John Yu on just that accusation, and check it out.
Power to order torture, and there was nothing that the Congress or a treaty could do to stop it. And now you're saying, well, you're not really saying that. Have you changed your mind since August of 2015?
I think is a matter of just pure domestic constitutional law. So I think, for example, that I don't think a treaty can constrain the president's command in chief. I think that's our argument. The argument making about adaptation of the rules is a question of what the United States should do as a matter of international law, which I treat as being a separate and distinct body of law from domestic constitutional
law. So in other words, if the president deems that he's got to torture somebody, including by crushing the testicles of the person's child, there is no law that can stop that.
No treaty.
And also no law by Congress. That's what you wrote in the August 2002 memo.
I think it depends on why the president thinks he needs to do that. I don't think presidents ever...
And you see, he is rightfully laughed at and booed and hissed. And if you couldn't quite make that out, that's basically Cassell saying, if the president deems that he's got to torture somebody, including by crushing the testicles of the person's child, there's no law that can stop him. And Yu says, no treaty. Cassell says, also no law by Congress. That's what you wrote in the August 2002 memo. And Yu says, I think it depends on why the president thinks he needs to do that. So it depends on why the president thinks he needs to crush the testicles of a child of a suspected terrorist. It's just up to his own kind of personal whim. You can read John Yu's bio. I don't recommend it. And so we're going to move on to Brownsville and the Houston Chronicle, cron.com. This is an Associated Press report. And this is basically about how Homeland Security, running behind in bureaucratic failure like they do in mostly everything else, are dumping a bunch of rules and regulations so they can get that border fence down on Mexico put up. Border fence environmental waiver may close two preserves. The announcement this week that the federal government would waive a host of environmental protection laws for the border fence spelled almost certain closure to two nature preserves that support a growing ecotourism business in a struggling region. We'll have to close, said Ann Brown, executive director and vice president of Autobahn Texas. Basically, you've moved the border. Now, we can hit, again, a different Associated Press report, rules to be waived for border fence. The Bush administration plans to use its authority to bypass more than 30 laws and regulations in an effort to finish building 670 miles of fence along the southwest U.S. border by the end of this year. Invoking the two legal waivers which Congress authorized would cut through bureaucratic red tape and sidestep environmental laws that currently stand in the way of Homeland Security's building of 267 miles of fencing in California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. The move would be the biggest use of legal waivers since the administration started building the fence, and it would cover a total of 470 miles along the southwest border. Yada yada. And I'll believe they actually get it done when we see it. However, I don't want a fucking fence. All it's going to do is keep us in. So if we hit up federal government petitions for waiver to install border fence, that's coming from KTSM TV. So there's some videos and there's a lot of different reports because, of course, a lot of regional, mostly Texas newspapers are hitting up, of course, the impact of this on their level. So you got the Brownsville Herald.com, Man vs. Nature, Park Leaders Fear Fence's Impact on Wildlife. Jimmy Paz has wandered through the dense brush of the Sebel Palm Audubon Center in Southmost for more than 50 years. Now they may, of course, have to close it. There's also KVEO, Border Fence's Potential Doom for Valley Nature Preserves, and I believe there's a video for that one as well. However, to cap all this off with a little bit from our favorite scumbag, Michael Chertoff, I was going to say, you know, speculative dual Israeli citizen, but I won't say that. He gave a little quick interview, actually, it was at a blogger's roundtable, if you like that. But basically, as he waives laws for Bush's border fence, Chertoff says immigrants must comply with the law. This week, the Department of Homeland Security announced, of course, that it's going to use its authority to do whatever it wants. But Chertoff says, then goes on to say, quote, "I think people on all ends of the spectrum should realize that it's in everybody's interest to get this job done at the border to enforce the law against employers. We also need to resolve the problem of people who are here illegally, who have got to comply with the law. But many of blah, blah, blah." Basically, the law is for us and not for them. But that video is up. Interestingly enough, I'm the only one that's put a comment up on YouTube. DHS Secretary Michael Chertoff on completing border fence, and he's got a nice can of Diet Coke there, and I said, drink that aspartame, Chertoff. Hopefully he drinks more and more and more of it. Now we're going to jump to, I believe I've mentioned this at some point, but now more bits are spilling out because I think they're trying to rush production to get it out possibly by the election or probably by the inauguration. But Oliver Stone's W movie. So if we first hit up Politico.com, new Bush biopic examines father-son tie. They first crossed paths 4 decades ago at Yale University. I didn't know that Oliver Stone dropped out of Yale twice. But Oliver Stone's climactic encounter with George W. Bush may come in movie theaters as early as this fall. Stone is planning to begin production this month of his upcoming biography of the president, tentatively titled W. An early draft of the screenplay, recently obtained by Politico.com, suggests the widely acclaimed, widely denounced director plans a departure from his previous presidential pictures, JFK and Nixon, both of which revolved around dark conspiracies at the seat of power, both of which, or at least JFK, is which his best film, and he's never really topped it since. And after things like World Trade Center, I've pretty much given up hope, but Josh Brolin's playing Bush. I think they're going to shoot in New Orleans, but The Guardian has an article about it, and they're mostly all pointing out the film seems to center around Bush and his relationship with Poppy Bush, 41, and also, I believe, the run-up to war. So ABC News also has daddy issues and war lust in Oliver Stone's W. So it's basically Oliver Stone is asking the musical question, how does a fucking drunk fuck-up end up the president of the United States? But I'm sure he's not going to dig too deep to find out what the real answers are. But speaking of the borders, we couldn't get away for too long. Dateline Sierra Vista, Arizona. Another AP report. Feds to fly more drones along U.S. border. The pilot's gone through his checklist and taxied his plane into position for takeoff. He gets clearance from the control tower, throttles forward, and from the ground guides his unmanned aircraft into the sky along the Mexican border to watch for drug traffickers and illegal immigrants, part of a bird's-eye patrol that authorities hope to expand. 4 Predator B drones have become fixtures over Arizona since October 2006, and two more will join them soon, said a Customs and Border Protection spokesman. One of those six are in place, and the agency, or rather, once those six are in place, the agency wants Congress to fund six drones along the Canadian border, and six more on Florida's Gulf Coast and the Caribbean. You're talking about really, really vast spaces and our ability to get some of the remote spaces efficiently, said spokesman Jerkoff. You can hit up airforce-technology.com and look at a picture of a Predator B drone. And we can also hit up KDBC.com. Again, Sierra Vista, Arizona Border Patrol drone program takes off. And they're all excited about it because they love the new police state. Now, my friends, speaking of the new police state, have you ever heard of the National Identification, or rather the National Animal Identification System, NAIS? If we hit up GPS Daily, it's basically a press release from the folks known as Digital Angel. You sometimes wonder if they know that they're fucking with the sort of Mark of the Beast believers that they're going to call it, you know, Digital Angel and things like that. But this coming, like I said, from GPSDaily.com, Digital Angel discusses goals of the National Animal Identification System. Digital Angel has discussed the goals of the NAIS and the company's position in an effort to educate investors and consumers. Animal identification provides producers with a uniform numbering system for their animals and links to livestock poultry to their premises of origin. Animal tracing, the final component of NAIS, allows producers to choose a private or state animal tracking database and report certain animal movements that may pose a significant risk of disease transmission. Now, Wikipedia has the NAIS as a government-run program in the United States intended to permit improved animal health surveillance by identifying and tracking specific animals. Now, did you know that if you go pick up a little animal that isn't a farm animal, you know, you want to adopt a dog, chances are they now have an RFID chip in them. The NAIS has their own website. It's run through, supposedly, the Department of Agriculture, but I'm sure it's tied in with DHS. So you can read more about it there. You can read about national tracing. Interestingly enough, though, if we jump back to May 30th, 2006, there's an article up on lourockwell.com, Stop the NAIS. And it says, the House of Representatives recently passed funding for a new federal mandate that threatens to put thousands of small farmers and ranchers out of business. The National Animal Identification System, known as NAIS, is an expensive and unnecessary federal program that requires owners of livestock, cattle, dairy, poultry, and even horses to tag animals with electronic tracking devices. The intrusive monitoring system amounts to nothing more than a tax on livestock owners, allowing the federal government access to detailed information about their private property. In typical Washington speak, NAIS is voluntary, provided USDA bureaucrats are satisfied with the level of cooperation. Trust me, NAIS will be mandatory within a few years. When was the last time a new federal program did not expand once implemented? And who, and that article does go on, but that was written, like I said, back May 30th, 2006, by some guy named Ron Paul. If we jump now to thought-criminal.org, my man Michael Vail has an article posted up coming originally from Mother Jones, The Real Life Matrix, and it's about a new book called The Complex by a guy named Nick Turse, T-U-R-S-E. At the beginning of Nick Turse's The Complex, we meet Rick, an educated anti-war Daily Show watching resident of the New York City suburbs. Rick wakes up to a Sony alarm clock, brushes his teeth with Crest toothpaste, and showers with Herbal Essences shampoo before catching a segment about Iraq on NBC's Today Show. If you asked him, Rick would tell you that his life has no connection to the military. But so far, everything Rick has touched has been produced by a company that does business with the Pentagon. The rest of his day will be no different. Whether we like it or not, we live in an America whose connections to the military are so numerous as to be virtually invisible. Like the fictional Matrix, what Terse calls the military corporate complex is ubiquitous, hidden, and influences our lives in ways that we never notice. From pharmaceutical companies to furniture makers, book publishers to office supply stores, tens of thousands of corporations work with the DoD. Their influence is so complete that it is close to impossible to opt out. Even zealous anti-corporate types read books in publishers Houghton Mifflin, Random House, and Warner Books are all DoD contractors. It's not just megacorporations either. Terse lists a number of small-town operations that also supply the Pentagon. And that's another book that I've thrown into my Amazon shopping cart, so we'll see how that one goes as well. Published by Metropolitan Books. It's called The Complex, How the Military Invades Our Everyday Lives. Speaking of the military invading our everyday lives, we jump to an article from Kurt Nemo up on Infowars.com. Fusion centers to data mine suspect citizens. Call it Stasi, the American version, circa 2008. The government is rounding up your cell phone numbers, insurance claims, credit reports, financial records, the names of your associates and relatives, and sharing them with law enforcement officials nationwide, reports John Byrne for Raw Story. So-called fusion centers, set up, of course, after 9/11, collect, store, and analyze commercial and public data on unknown millions of Americans. Little is known about the centers, though they received $254 million from the Department of Homeland Stupidity between 2004 and 2007. In East Germany, before our rulers decided the Berlin Wall must fall, the Stasi did much the same. Although they didn't have the sophisticated technology available to the mysterious fusion centers in the U.S. But the idea was exactly the same, to ferret out dissidents and compile dossiers on every aspect of their lives. The Ministry of Homeland Security, the FBI, the Pentagon, the CIA, the NSA, these folks are not interested in the comings and goings of apolitical Joe Sixpack, who is not a threat to the state. And the fusion centers are not gathering info on Al-Qaeda, blonde hair, blue eyes, or otherwise, because there is no such thing, or only such a thing when the government decides it's time to scare witless adults and small children. No, the target here, as decades-long revelations about the FBI demonstrate, and as we've already demonstrated, are people involved in the anti-war movement, the so-called Patriot Movement, environmentalists not funded by the Ford and Rockefeller Foundations, that is to say, anybody and everybody opposed to the government and not part of the fake opposition. That article from Kurt Nemo goes on, but if we jump, of course, you can read about the Stasi. That was the Ministry for State Security, commonly known as the Stasi, was the official secret police of East Germany. If we jump a little bit back in time, we can see the connections here, my friends. December 6, 2004, ex-Stasi spy chief Marcus Wolf, M-A-R-K-U-S-W-O-L-F, Marcus Wolf hired by Homeland Security? Political analyst Al Martin, who has in the past proven accurate in getting ahead of the news curve, is reporting that Homeland Security has hired former Stasi head, the Silver Fox, Marcus Wolf. Al Martin writes, quote, "Wolf is the man that effectively built the East German State Intelligence Operations Internal Directorate. He turned half the population into informants. That's his specialty, is taking a population, constructing the various state divisions, mechanisms of control, in order to organize informants within the population. That is his real specialty." Now, unfortunately, Al Martin and Prison Planet are the only place I can find the backup of DHS hiring Marcus Wolf. If you have more info on that, send me a comment, put it on MediaMonarchy.com. But staying on the Stasi spy state, if we hit up Raw Story, the report that was mentioned, that's linked up. The article's called States Quietly Buy and Mine Personal Data, Including Names of Your Associates and Relatives. And it talks about documents obtained by the Washington Post and the things we've discovered. And you can even jump over to Michigan State University, msu.edu, and they're getting into the act. MSU trains nation's police in fighting against terrorism. Michigan State University is teaching the nation's police how to work together to sniff out and stop terrorism, a task that has taken on special significance with the emergence of dozens of terrorism-focused fusion centers. The centers, supported by the Department of Homeland Security, are meant to link the intelligence gathering efforts of local, state, and federal authorities. That's a drastic blah, blah, blah. They're federalizing your local police, schools, everything. Everything. USA Today has civilians handle minor duties for strapped police. Facing tighter budgets, law enforcement agencies across the country are increasingly turning to civilians. You're a civilian, remember. If you're not with the military, you're a civilian. Because we're being militarized. Turning to civilians to respond to some calls that sworn officers and deputies are usually responsible for. That means people calling 911 to report a traffic accident, a burglarized home, or a stolen car may be greeted by a civilian in a polo shirt instead of a gun-toting officer. It hasn't been universally adopted throughout the country, but most areas have at least thought about the alternative and are more open to it now because of the economy. Aww. It's almost coming together like it was planned. So finally on the home spy state, Washington Times, the Mooney Times. Street sweeper cameras eye illegal parking. Sure they do. D.C. officials have put cameras on light poles, police cars, and government buildings. Now they're preparing to put them on street sweepers in the latest example of increasing surveillance of city residents. The D.C. Council voted unanimously to pass legislation introduced at the request of Mayor Adrian M. Fenty that will let officials equip the district tractor-sized street sweeping machines with cameras that can scan license plates and photograph vehicles illegally parked in a street sweeping zone. And I think it's going up soon for a vote. The people that would then somewhat unwittingly be running it is the Department of Public Works because they run the street sweepers. Shifting gears, my friends, on this 70th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. I'm not a big fan of Air America. I'm mostly like Mike Malloy, although Tom Hartman is a smart motherfucker. Rainey Rose has always been kind of annoying, and so you probably already know that she's been suspended for calling Hillary a fucking whore.
Hillary is a big fucking whore too, okay? So the pledged delegates aren't legally obligated to do anything. Oh, fuck you. You know, just fuck you. They're not legally bound to do anything, she said. And if that doesn't work, you know she's going all Lieberman on you, right? Because it's that Northeastern politics. It's very, very tough. Everything is a fucking scandal up there. Everything is a scandal, and yet they're doing all of it.
So, Rhodes has now been suspended from the Air America network. They released the following statement saying Air America has suspended on-air host Randy Rhodes for making inappropriate statements about prominent figures. And blah-bitty-blah-bitty-blah, Air America's Randy Rhodes said suspended. So there's several different reports, and you can see a video. I'm not exactly sure what event she's at. It's not like she was on air saying this, of course. It looks like it's some kind of event, and it comes off like bad stand-up. And so now she's been pilloried for Hillary. Ted Turner always popping up to say ridiculous things. He's now said that global warming, however more specifically when you get into the article, it's overpopulation, could lead to cannibalism. So if this is coming from AJC, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Failure to address global warming will have us all dead or eating each other by mid-century. So says Ted Turner, the restaurateur, environmentalist, and former media mogul whose controversial comments have earned him the nickname Mouth of the South. Of course, we remember, folks, that he said in an interview to the Audubon Society that a total world population of 250 to 300 million people, a 95% decline from present levels, would be ideal. So Ted Turner, like Prince Charles and Prince Philip and Bill Gates and all these people, eugenicists. That's what they draw from. That's what it's coming from. It's eugenics. Shifting gears, though, it's always fun to pick on John Ashcroft anytime you get the opportunity. So, coming from Saratoga Springs, WNYT.com, swastika was drawn on a John Ashcroft poster at Skidmore College.
Some members of the Skidmore College community plan to protest the lecture tomorrow night by former U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft. At least one person has already made their feelings known by drawing a swastika on a sign promoting Ashcroft's appearance. News Channel 13's Mark Mulholland live now in our Saratoga newsroom, and he's got the story.
Well, Bonita, some think the conservative Ashcroft at Skidmore is out of place, but all think drawing a swastika on an Ashcroft poster is out of line.
Some said that freedom was the price we would pay for our security. But
John Ashcroft resigned from the U.S. Attorney General's post in 2005, but he still evokes passion in liberals and conservatives. Conservatives like the Skidmore Young Republicans credit Ashcroft with preventing another attack on American soil. Critics like Skidmore's Young Democrats say Ashcroft's Patriot Act was an attack on civil liberties.
I think he did great harm to civil liberties in the aftermath of 9/11. I think he shepherded through the Patriot Act without the type of oversight that I would have liked to have seen. But nevertheless, I think that we all owe it to him and to the young Republicans who have done a great job putting on this event to be respectful.
Ashcroft will speak at Skidmore tomorrow night. He was brought to the school by the Young Republicans. Student fees pay for part of Ashcroft's $25,000 fee.
And they rarely will hear conservative views in the classroom or through other programs that the college puts on. So we feel it's up to us to do things like this.
Ashcroft's appearance has some protesting. Someone drew a swastika on a poster promoting the lecture. It's covered in whiteout now, but not before making some, Republicans and Democrats, red with anger.
And I didn't want to believe it. Like, it was really gross to see.
If what we're trying to do is counter John Ashcroft, I think this is the absolute worst way to do it.
No, I think it's a great way to do it. You can hit skidmore.edu and you can see that Ashcroft addresses a packed house. And it's funny to hear the guy say that, oh, it's just so rare that you get to hear something conservative. Here's a strange one. This one's coming from the New York Times under the headline, "Offer of a Murder Surfaces at Wiretap Trial." However, most of us in the Patriot community know and love Aaron Russo and posted it up under the headline of "Aaron Russo was the target of an assassination." So Dateline Los Angeles, a hedge fund manager and art collector from New York testified under immunity Tuesday that Anthony Pelicano, the Hollywood private detective accused of wiretapping and racketeering, had once offered to have a movie producer killed for him. Adam D. Cinder, the owner of Exis Capital, a hedge fund that at one point had more than $1 billion in assets, said in federal district court here that he had paid Mr. Pelicano about $500,000 to investigate Aaron Russo, a producer and one-time talent manager whose film credits included Trading Places. Mr. Russo died of cancer last year. Of course, Aaron Russo spent the last couple years of his life fighting the New World Order. Once he discovered that the income tax was a complete fraud, and he discovered that 9/11 was an inside job, and he figured out that this was all planned and they were going to go for it, he spent the last couple years of his life becoming an activist, and of course he made America from freedom to fascism, and that's all linked up, and you can watch that film. And of course, Aaron Russo, our man, passed away last year on August 24th. And you can hit some links and read about Anthony Pelicano and all this shady stuff and the PI to the stars. And this basically sounds like some low-level wise guy bullshit. Alex Ansari has a couple new shows up. He also has a different Wilderness Awareness School video posted up. He, of course, has two radio shows a week now on the We the People radio network. So Alex Ansari is the host here in Portland, Oregon, of Outside the Box, a TV show that's on Portland Community Media every Thursday night. And then he posts them up online. They've been a little sporadic lately, and usually I will play clips from them. This week I don't have time. I got too much stuff. So under the posting of Outside the Box number 145 and 146, you got 2 hour-long episodes of Outside the Box. You've got 5 2-hour radio shows from We the People Radio Network, and a bonus video of Alex presenting a look at some of the skills you can develop at the Wilderness Awareness School located in Duval, Washington. In the video, you get introduced to several arts such as percussion flaking, fire making, and identifying and harvesting medicinal and edible plants. And you can learn more about that by going to wildernessawareness.org. Now, as we get into some of the latest on 9/11. Finally, he went all the way. Jesse Ventura joins fully the 9/11 truth movement.
Jesse Ventura says he is skeptical about the official version of events on 9/11 and wishes he would have said so sooner. Ventura was Minnesota's governor when the planes hit the Twin Towers. He now says he regrets not asking more questions about the attacks back then when his words carried more weight. Ventura spoke yesterday with a radio host who believes the U.S. government was behind the attacks.
Governor Ventura, you've got the floor. Give us your take on 9/11.
Well, first of all, Alex, let me state this. You know, being ex-military, when the attack initially took place and I was governor, I went on a very focused tunnel vision mode that our country had been attacked and what the hell we need to do to repel it. So I today kicked myself because at that point in time, I had a position of power. And if I would have, you know, not been the way I was, the way all of us were so shocked when it happened, that in that position of power, I could have raised a lot more questions at that time about the things that went down that day. And where today, when I raise those questions, naturally, it doesn't quite have the impact that it would have had back then. But to me, it's questions that are not being answered and haven't been answered about 9/11. And, you know, first and foremost, I think, is the fact that, okay, in New York City and Manhattan, two planes struck two buildings. We'll all be in agreement on that, I think. But how is it that a third building fell 5 hours later? You know, what they call World Trade Center Building Number 7. And for people that think, well, it was just a smaller building, it was 51 stories high, which, of course, Manhattan probably isn't that big of a building. But if you were to move that building to Austin, Texas, or to Minneapolis, Minnesota, it would be a huge building.
It's the biggest.
How could this building just implode into its own footprint 5 hours later? That's my first question. The 9/11 Commission never even brought it up. They didn't devote even one page to that in their big volume of investigation. Number two, how could those buildings fall at the speed of gravity? You know, if you put a stopwatch on them, both of those World Trade Center buildings were on the ground in 10 seconds. How can that be? If you took a billiard ball and dropped it from the height of the World Trade Center in a vacuum, it would hit the ground in 9.3 seconds. And then if you took the same billiard ball and dropped it 10 stories at a time and merely stopped it and studded it, it would take 30 seconds. If you dropped it every floor of the World Trade Center to the ground, simply stopping and starting it on gravity, it would take over 100 seconds to reach the ground.
Amazing.
And yet they're telling us that, and I could go on now after studying it, the planes hit the building, okay, jet fuel is 4/5 kerosene, which is not a hot burning fuel. And they want us to believe that it melted these steel structured girders and caused these buildings to pancake, collapse to the ground. I was on the site with 2 weeks after it happened, and I saw none of these pancakes. Wouldn't they all be piled up in a huge mass on the ground? And yet everything was blown into dust.
Aerosolized.
You know, and when you look at it from that aspect, none of it makes any sense. If you apply common sense again to it, it does not make any sense. Never before in the annals of history has a fire caused a steel-structured building to fall to the ground.
There you go, my friends. Jesse Ventura tells Alex Jones that he could kick himself for believing the official 9/11 story at first and wishes he would have raised more questions. Questions, of course, that still haven't been answered to this day. So that whole interview, that was just a little bit, is, of course, it's up in three parts on YouTube, or you can just go straight to 9/11 Blogger and get the whole thing, or prisonplanet.com. Finally, though, a lot of other places did start to pick up the story. The last I saw was that the AP has picked it up, and so that can only be good, my friends. Moving, though, quickly to Newsweek is one little quick interesting thing. going over all these things, the supposed the Saddam tapes. They're going through all kinds of evidence and things. This is at the bottom of an article on Newsweek. Quote, "Perhaps the most revealing of all was the tape of Saddam's conversations with his ministers after the World Trade Center bombing in February 93, a plot linked to a group of Islamic radicals, one of whom, Abdul Rahman Yassin, was an Iraqi-American who fled to Baghdad after the attack. But the newly discovered tape shows that Saddam and his ministers were puzzled by the bombing and wondered whether the Zionists or U.S. intelligence were secretly behind it." And of course, as we've gone over on the show time and time before, they were behind it. The FBI, of course, again, as Alex Jones even always says, cooked the bomb, trained the driver, gave him the detonators. Imad Salim got nervous. He was the informant. He started taping his phone conversations with FBI agent John Antisev. Imad Salim thought they were going to do a sting, a fake one. FBI told him to go ahead with it. They gave him real shit. They set off a bomb. Inside job, WTC 93. Case closed. If we jump now to a strange little bit that leaked out from creepy, and actually speaking of World Trade Center 93, the now Attorney General Michael Mukasey, of course, was instrumental in helping cover up World Trade Center 93. However, in a new bit of revelation from the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco last Thursday, Attorney General Michael Mukasey tacitly admitted that the U.S. government intercepted a call about 9/11, before 9/11. Before the 2001 attacks, he said, "We knew that there had been a call from some place that was known to be a safe house in Afghanistan, and we knew that it had come to the United States. We didn't know precisely where it went." And that report comes from the San Francisco Chronicle. However, our man Keith Olbermann did pick up the bit. So in this story, you're going to hear about a few different bad things going on for Bush, and we're going to get into the part about Mukasey mentioning that, oh yeah, there was a call, and it was about 9/11.
Bush. Number 3, Iraq and 9/11 gate. Former Gitmo detainee Murat Kurnaz repeating in an interview what he had told his attorney 3 years ago while still being held by the U.S., that when he was originally picked up and stored in Afghanistan for 2 months, interrogators hung him by his arms from the ceiling of a freezing aircraft hangar for 5 days, with doctors coming by periodically to assure his captors it was okay to keep on hanging him there. Kurnaz says his interrogators demanded he admit he was an operative of and an associate of Mohammed Atta, the 9/11 plotter. The torture, sadly, is old news. The new news is Kurnaz was from Germany. So, remember the attempt to link 9/11 to Iraq by way of Mohammed Atta and some apocryphal meeting he was supposed to have had with the Iraqi intelligence service in Prague, April 2001? Well, get some German-born Muslim to admit he knew Atta, and you're halfway home to putting Atta at a meeting with Iraqi agents, even if it never happened. Number 2, mortgage gate. Mr. Bush's Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Alfonso Jackson, under criminal investigation, has resigned. The top Bush guy on homes quits in the middle of a homes crisis. As the coroner says to Jack Nicholson in the movie Chinatown, middle of a drought and a water commissioner drowns. Only in L.A. And number 1, Mukasey said what gate? Almost ignored in the coverage of his speech to the Commonwealth Club of San Francisco pleading for telecom immunity, Attorney General Michael Mukasey also said, quote, before 9/11, that's the call that we didn't know about. We knew that there has been a call from some place that was known to be a safe house in Afghanistan, and we knew that it came to the United States. We didn't know precisely where it went. What? The government knew about some phone call from a safe house in Afghanistan into the U.S. about 9/11, before 9/11, and even though it had the same FISA courts and the same right to act against international targets in 2001 as it does now, you didn't do anything about it? Well, this would seem to leave only two options. Either the Attorney General just admitted that the government for which he works is guilty of malfeasant complicity in the 9/11 attacks, or he's lying. I'm betting on lying. If not, somebody in Congress better put that man under oath right quick. You could send him to Gitmo, I suppose.
I'm going for malfeasant complicity myself, but Keith Olbermann, of course, is entitled to his opinion. Of course, as we've mentioned before, anytime I hit up Keith Olbermann, we're, of course, taking bets that once a Democrat gets in, his job will be done and he'll quit doing countdown. Because the good Democrats will be in and they're really going to save us. However, now, my friends, if we jump to globalresearch.ca has a whole excerpt from David Ray Griffin's new book, 9/11 Contradictions. And so we touched on this before when he first broke the story on the Charles Goyette Show. We played a clip from that just a couple weeks ago. Charles Goyette Show, KFNX, out of somewhere in Arizona. But basically, Griffin's new book has a little bit about those supposed phone calls from Barbara Olson on Flight 77 to her husband, Solicitor General Ted Olson. And that is where a lot of the original reporting about 9/11 came from. So, let's just hit just a little bit of this. Late in the day on 9/11, CNN put out a story that began, quote, Barbara Olson, a conservative commentator and attorney, alerted her husband, Solicitor General Ted Olson, that the plane she was on was being hijacked Tuesday morning, Ted Olson told CNN. End quote. Ted Olson's report was the sole source of the widely accepted idea that the hijackers had box cutters. However, although Ted Olson's report of phone calls from his wife had been a central pillar of the official account of 9/11, this report has been completely undermined. And it goes on to detail about... It's not been officially denied, and this is what's put in the headline. Three official denials of Ted Olson's report of calls from Barbara Olson. That they're basically refuted by the FBI, and I believe the 9/11 Commission, and other circumstantial reports. I don't have that full article in front of me because I'm all kind of winging it here, doing the show the different way, so bear with me, my friends. One last bit of 9/11 news, and one more quick clip, though, but Philly 9/11 Truth, back at it again. Talk to Arlen Single Bullet Specter. And this is another one where you need to go watch the video because the audio may not exactly do it for you. However, from 911blogger.com, questions posed by members of Philly 9/11 Truth to Senator Arlen Specter about the pre-9/11 military intelligence program Able Danger and the post-9/11 anthrax attacks were responded to with a fair degree of actual candidacy.
Senator Specter, as chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee on the Able Danger hearings, how do you feel about the outcome of those hearings with the reality that several prominent members of the Able Danger Project were not allowed to testify because of certain procedures?
You say people weren't allowed to testify?
Yeah. What's your name? Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer and Colonel Philpott.
To testify in the confirmation hearings?
Yeah. On hearings on Able Danger.
On Able Danger?
Able Danger, yes. The pre-9/11 intelligence program.
Well, that wasn't with respect to the confirmation hearings on the Supreme Court nominees. We could not get them to testify because the Department of Defense wouldn't let them testify.
Yeah.
Well, Able Danger had some items which were potentially embarrassing to the Department of Defense, and we pushed ahead as far as we could, and they refused to allow them to testify on grounds of national security. And we... Like the song from Oklahoma, we went about as far as we could go. We got pretty far and exposed a lot of it, but couldn't pursue it beyond that.
Did you feel compelled to further when, you know, there was retribution against Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer? They tried to find allegations of certain activities.
Now, it's probably tough to make all that out in that clip, but they're basically asking Arlen Single Bullet Specter about Able Danger, which is, of course, the thing that uncovered Muhammad Atta's identity before 9/11. And, of course, that involves Lieutenant Schaefer and Colonel Philpott. And, of course, Kurt Weldon was the congressman that was trying to bring it all out. And then he ended up getting railroaded and lost his seat. But you need to learn about Able Danger if you have not looked into it, my friends. We, I believe, are now into our number 2 of episode 70 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's April 4th, 2008. My name's James, and I'm usually coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. I, of course, am doing the show due to technical difficulties at home this time. However, You're still hearing me on revereradio.info Sunday nights at 7 Eastern Time. And you can, of course, always hit me up on MySpace, Dig, YouTube, and Yahoo with Media Monarchy as your keyword. And please download, subscribe, share, proselytize, and tell people about the podcast. MediaMonarchy.com, RadioForAll.net, Archive.org, and you can get it. Now, something I've been doing on MediaMonarchy.com for about the last year, as I collect up news stories and just bookmark them and don't have the time to post them up, I then post them up in a big, huge swath and call it a clearinghouse. So, if you're ready and I'm ready, let's see if I can blast through the March clearinghouse. So, kicking it off is an article from my man Webster Tarpley. This was written March 25th. And I believe we've mentioned Operation Bite before, B-I-T-E. However, the article is, April 6th, sneak attack by U.S. forces on Iran planned, Russian military sources warn. General Ivashov calls for emergency session of U.N. Security Council to ward off looming U.S. aggression. Dateline D.C. The long-awaited U.S. military attack on Iran is now on track for the first week of April, specifically for 4 a.m. on April 6th, the Good Friday opening of Easter weekend, writes the well-known Russian journalist Andrei Yuglanov in the Moscow Weekly Argumenti Nedeli. Now, of course, that's not actually Easter. We already had Easter. The attack is slated to last for 12 hours, according to Yuglanov, lasting from 4 a.m. until 4 p.m. local time. Friday is holiday in Iran, and of course, the attack, codename Operation Bite. About 20 targets are marked for bombing. The list includes uranium enrichment facilities, research centers, and laboratories. Now, I'm going to stop there because that's kind of odd, and I didn't quite notice that. I'm almost wondering if this is a recycling of an article from 2 months ago, and that now April 6th has been moved up as the supposed attack date. So, I don't want to give that too much attention because there's too many times to predict that the sky is going to fall on April 6th. However, I dare at least put it on the record, so if it does, I say, hey, I told you. If we jump to Danger Room on Wired.com, middle school kids threatened with terrorist watch list. And it's in Georgia, and kids are basically threatened to have their names put on the terrorist watch list. Another one from Danger Room, airport screening makeover promises soothing music and see-through x-rays. And of course, you know that they're going to have x-rays that completely see through your body, as in a naked image of you without clothes. Jump to military.com, and coming from Stars and Stripes, urine tester guilty of using drugs. A staff sergeant charged with running his unit's drug testing program was found guilty in a general court-martial of using marijuana himself and engaging in a conspiracy to hide another soldier's drug use. So there you go. He's going to drug test the drug testers. The Los Angeles Times, top of the ticket blog, has Paul campaign goes on. Apparently, cadres of volunteers read the Missouri Republican rulebook and have burrowed into the party structure from the inside at the recent county caucus meetings. And that seems to be going on around the country. The tenacious Paul supporters, God love them, are still doing it, and they're going to have embedded themselves somehow in the structure, I believe, before this year and this election season is out. I still wholeheartedly support RonPaul2008.com. Like I said, once McCain got the delegates, and then it's all a big, messy game as far as having some brokered convention and yada, yada, yada. Having said that, Time has why Ron Paul scares the GOP, and this is actually from March 20th, but it reminisces on articles we've seen over the last year about, basically, he's the only real different challenge to the structure. Here's a good one, coming from The Raw Story, and this is why it's so great that all these candidates are all over the place, and they get confronted on different things. This is not a confrontation like our friends at We Are Change would do, where you basically have some gotcha journalism and you get them on the spot. This is a little different. This guy was very polite and asked his question. So this was at a town hall in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Hey, I've been there. And let's listen. All right. Gentleman right here in the blue.
Senator, first of all, thank you for honoring the wishes of the people and not taking lobbyist money.
Absolutely. I appreciate that.
It's been reported that you and your wife are in the globalist CFR, which is a Council on Foreign Relations. I'd like to know if that is true. And also, I'd like to know where you stand on the North American Union, which has been confirmed recently in the press. Ron Paul actually spoke about it, and the Congress has actually spent some money on it. This North American Union involves a union much like the European Union, only with Canada, Mexico, and the United States, and the possible merging of the money system into a piece called the Amero, which would actually strip the United States of some of its sovereignty, right, and perhaps our rights. Where do you stand on that?
Well, first of all, I'm not... The Council on Foreign Relations, I don't know if I'm a official member. I've spoken there before. It basically is just a forum where a bunch of people talk about foreign policy. And so there's nothing, there's no official membership. I don't have a card or, you know, a special handshake or anything like that. In terms of this North America, union, this has been something I know Ron Paul's talked about and people have been talking about. I have to say, with all due respect, that I see no evidence of this actually taking place. I think this has been something that has been ginned up in certain blogs and the internet. It was based partly on the fact that there's this highway being built in Texas that will facilitate more transportation and travel between Mexico and the intercontinental United States on up through Canada. And so people have perceived that this potentially means that somehow there's going to be this union like the European Union. There's no evidence that that's taking place. NAFTA helped to break down barriers of trade between those three countries, and I was opposed to NAFTA because I thought that it didn't have the labor and the environmental standards and the safety standards that would look out for U.S. workers. But I don't think that there's some conspiracy to create this one, you know, continental government between Canada and Mexico. I see no evidence of that. All right? Okay, next.
He's lying, my friends. There is a plethora of evidence if you take maybe even an afternoon to investigate the Security and Prosperity Partnership or the Trans-Texas Corridor or the NASCO Superhighway or the integration that's going on with having Canadian troops in America and American troops in Mexico and vice versa. Switch it all around. SPP, NAU, it is for real. Quickly moving to peoplesvoice.org, hope, change, and pissing in the wind of Obama, Democrats, and the power elite. That's an article up on the peoplesvoice.org. There's an article up on The Guardian, echoes of 1968 return to haunt the divided Democrats. And of course, it's setting the stage for a clusterfuck Democratic convention, and of course makes reference to the new film Chicago 10 about Abby Hoffman and all of that. New York Times has, as jobs vanish and prices rise, food stamp use nears record. And I was, of course, sad to see that my home state of West Virginia has 1 in 6 people on food stamps. If we hit up now a video up on YouTube from InfoWarrior NWO Slayer, but it's actually coming from KVUE, which we mentioned before, TV. Kids have to thumb scan for school lunch.
Well, so new technology is helping to make sure young kids cannot lose their school lunch money. As Daniel Seberg explained, some schools are setting up prepaid accounts that students access with the touch of their finger.
At lunchtime, the students of the West End Elementary School in Rome, Georgia, use their fingers for more than just eating.
Go ahead, Patrick.
They also use them for identification in paying for their lunch. The children's parents prepay into an account and deductions are made each mealtime. The finger scans ensure that each child's meal is deducted from the correct account.
It's just scientific.
In the past, Rome, Georgia students scanned barcode cards or punched PIN numbers into a keypad to get their meals. But the cards would get lost or damaged, and the PIN numbers would be forgotten or mistyped. There's no forgetting or losing fingers.
It has dramatically increased our time of getting our students through the line more quickly and efficiently. In this particular school, we have cut the lunch serving time 20 minutes, and we still have kindergarten, first and second grade to implement.
School Nutrition Director Barbara Carter says the scanning system is secure. It's not connected to the internet, only the cafeteria server. And it records only 7 points on a finger, not a full fingerprint.
Be afraid, my friends. Be very afraid. You basically heard the woman there say that it gets the cattle more efficiently through the feeding trough. We jump now to Beyond the Beyond up on Wired.com. They're celebrating 30 years of the Billboard Liberation Front, and of course we've gone over their culture jamming work before. News of the World out of the UK, they basically have the Jersey House of Horror scandal going on. It was basically a sort of foster home. However, the article is kids loaned out for rape cruises. Children from the Jersey House of Horrors were loaned to rich pedophile yachtsmen as galley sex slaves, a News of the World investigation reveals. The youngsters were told by a care staff the boat rides were treats, only to be assaulted and raped at sea by perverts. Details of the sick attacks emerged as we discovered even more blood had been found in a bath in the dungeon underneath the Jersey House. And that's something I've been hearing a little bit about. I'd never heard of it before. But I've been listening to the daily podcast from theguardian.co.uk. But if we jump to Wikinews, they do a lot of coverage on Scientology, but perhaps more specifically, anti-Scientology. Protesters arrested at an anti-Scientology event in Atlanta while protesting outside the Scientology Church of Georgia in Atlanta, Georgia, in the United States. Two members of the group, Anonymous, were arrested by DeKalb County Riot Police, while standing opposite the Church of Scientology-owned building. So this, of course, follows up the fact that for the last couple months, a group known as Anonymous has been waging war on the corrupt cult organization known as the Church of Scientology. They should be exposed and ridiculed. And one way to help that is that recently, Church of Scientology's Operating Thetan documents were leaked online. Wikinews has obtained the Operating Thetan, that's OT, documents of the Church of Scientology, which were leaked via WikiLeaks, which we have also gone over. If we jump to RadarOnline.com, Radar Magazine, Scientology sets sights on African expansion as they're trying to get into South Africa and some Kyalami Castle, as it is called, situated on a 22-acre parcel of land just outside Johannesburg city limits. Also in anti-Scientology news, there's a new feature-length film called The Prophet, that's with an F, of course. Copies of The Prophet, a 2001 film blocked from distribution in the United States due to a court injunction won by the Church of Scientology, appeared on the internet a couple Fridays ago on peer-to-peer file-sharing websites and, of course, on YouTube and Google Video. So look for The Prophet 2001, a film about Scientology. And, of course, gets into the deaths related to Scientology in Clearwater, Florida, and all that. If we jump back to another one from Kurt Nimmo, he's got the Pentagon's pain compliance and mind control weapons. Of course, my friends, we know that they have the LRADs and the sound wave devices, and they're just raring to use them at home. FCW.com, Federal Computer Week, has disaster action plan inspires hope. And it's basically about a new bureaucratic response plan. The Bush administration has revised its blueprint for dealing with natural and man-made disasters with a focus on gaps identified by state and local emergency managers and other stakeholders outside the federal government. That would be elite corporate interests. The National Response Framework, designed to replace the 2004 National Response Plan, became official March 22nd. The framework includes instructions for federal, state, and local authorities, the private sector, and non-governmental organizations. And so if you hit up that link, you can download the PDF and see all the things that they have planned for you and your family as they split them up and send them off to forced labor camps. Natural News and... No, I'm sorry. This is Washington Times yet again. The Mooney Press, the UPI. However, study says natural goods, of course, have petrochemicals. Enjoying your natural vanilla and aloe shampoo, bathing baby in a garden of honeysuckle, feeling good about the earth as well as your skin when showering with pricey natural products. It, of course, turns out that many of those products have the same petrochemical compound found in less expensive mainstream bath products. The Organic Consumers Association, OCA, an advocacy group, recently tested 100 personal care and cleaning products touted as natural or organic. 47 of the samples contained 1,4-dioxane, a petroleum-based compound that appears as a byproduct of the processing used to soften harsh detergents. Among the samples containing 1,4-dioxane, products from well-known brands such as Kiss My Face, Jason Natural Products, Whole Foods 365 brand, and 7th Generation. Products that actually feature the U.S. Department of Agriculture's organic seal, which must contain 95% natural ingredients, did not contain the compound. So, basically, what we already knew, you gotta have the official full-on USDA organic seal. DemocracyNow.org has an interview with Bill Donahue. Phil Donahue. How can I mess his name up? And actually, his new documentary is called Body of War. It is finally out. I forget exactly how long ago it was that I covered it on MediaMonarchy.com, but now the film is out, and there's a lengthy and excellent interview with Phil Donahue up on Democracy Now! Something that we hit, this is basically related to what we went over last week. You remember that pilot whose gun went off in the plane? You kind of wonder, it's like, well, why does the pilot have a gun? Well, because he's part of the Federal Flight Protection Officer Program, whatever it's called. However, people say, well, why aren't air marshals on the planes? Why aren't air marshals on the planes?
If there is one place Americans should feel safe after 9/11, it should be here at Washington's Ronald Reagan Airport. Certainly, any attempt to take over the plane would be thwarted by federal air marshals. But that is only if federal air marshals are on board. CNN is being told by air marshals themselves that on 99 flights out of 100, they're not.
If I would say 1%, less than 1%, would I be far from the mark?
I don't think so. I think you'd be far from the mark.
These two federal air marshals told us on camera what at least a dozen of their colleagues and pilots have told CNN off-camera. Afraid to be identified for fear of retribution, they say the Department of Homeland Security hides behind national security laws because making the facts public would be a PR disaster.
Are the numbers classified because the numbers are embarrassing?
I would be very embarrassed by them if they were to get out.
Jumping again to RawStory.com, coming from Reuters, Sirius plans to buy XM. It gets, of course, antitrust approval. If you remember, in this country, there used to be things called antitrust laws and no monopolies and things like that, but those days are, of course, long gone. PressTV.ir has Iraqi cleric bans Pepsi and Coca-Cola. There's our second reference of Coca-Cola in this episode. An Iraqi Ayatollah has issued a religious decree prohibiting Muslims from trafficking in the carbonated beverages Pepsi and Coca-Cola. Ayatollah Sheikh Qasim Ataya, a prominent cleric in Najaf, has called on all Muslims to refrain from consuming, selling, or importing the drinks. The fatwa was issued after a study allegedly confirmed that a key element in Pepsi and Coca-Cola is an extract of pig intestines, which is forbidden in Islam. That's good enough for me. Reuters, and this basically is important because it's always important whenever you see the news throwing in your face the term New World Order. Banks face New World Order consolidation. Financial firms face a New World Order after a weekend fire sale of Bear Stearns and the Federal Reserve's first emergency weekend meeting since 1979. And it goes into, of course, the corrupt banking industry. And as we'll get to in a little bit, of course, they can bail out them. But you, on the other hand, my friend, are fucked. Again from Reuters, STM Micro launches chip to detect bird flu, or the VeriFlu bird chip deception is launched. Europe's top semiconductor maker, ST Microelectronics, said it has developed a portable chip to detect influenza viruses, including bird flu, in humans. So get your bird flu chip today. Jumping to DailyVedette.com, government watch list includes thousands, some unexpected, of course. People added a list due to belief of a national security threat. If we jump to... Where's this coming from? Actually, I had to get the cache of the page. It came from idolater.typepad.com, but the page wasn't loading, so I got the cache linked up on MediaMonarchy.com. Intel Fusion. And this... leads us off into another direction, but of course it leads us all right back to Microsoft and, of course, corporate technological interests being in bed with the military-industrial complex. Microsoft picks up where DARPA left off. Microsoft and Intel are funding advanced computing research at two universities to help launch computing power into the next level, multi-core parallel computing. Without this type of research, computer advancements in speed and processing power are quickly going to hit their peak. So basically, that's saying Microsoft is taking over where DARPA, a, of course, military scientific Frankenstein group, left off. You probably heard about this one. This one's coming from The Guardian. Obama's family tree expanded to include, of course, the Bushes. And this is another article detailing about how most of the elites and celebrities and people that we worship are pretty much all inbred and related people, and that's how they maintain their power. You know, because we used to listen to these, you know, old stories or read old Victorian kind of tales, and you hear about elites, and they were inbred. It's how they keep their power. We jump to Consortium News. Ex-CIA agent, and of course, another 9/11 truther. A little bit less than the average, but ex-CIA agent Ray McGovern has an article about the latest Frontline episode, Bush's War. He calls it a timid Iraq retrospective. You can, of course, just hit up PBS and Frontline and download the whole show of Bush's War. Moving quickly along, one from the AP, fingerprint scans replace clocking in. Some workers are doing it at Dunkin' Donuts, at Hilton Hotels, even at Marine Corps bases. Employees at a growing number of businesses are starting and ending their days by pressing a hand or finger to a scanner that logs the precise time of their arrival and departures, information that is automatically reflected in payroll records. Manufacturers say these biometric devices improve efficiency and streamline payroll operations and help train people to become a fucking slave, because you're gonna be. And you want to know, actually, here's a good example. We're going to shift gears, but this video is out, and this is, I believe, this week our first mention of the coming clusterfuck for China and their Olympics. I think it's going to be ugly, myself. However, Tibetans, peaceful Tibetans, as generally most of the time, were in New York City protesting outside, I believe, of course, the UN, which is, of course, the home of death and destruction. So... here is disturbing audio from a video of what happened in New York City when the cops met the Tibetans.
Officer Delgado, Serrano, you guys, be gentle. Why are you being so rough? Who are you?
You can have your camera.
I'm right outside looking at your name. Why are you guys being so rough? Look at this guy with a stick. He's got a club. It's Officer Leroy. Swinging a club. He's swinging a club. Leroy. Officer Letty. Officer Letty is swinging a club. Officer Letty. Officer Moralu. For no reason at all. Officer Reddy, look at these cops clubbing people in front of the UN. Unbelievable. Protesting to free Tibet, cops clubbing people in their legs, in the sidewalk, in front of the UN, in America. This is not China. There's another club coming out. Unbelievable. Another one. Another club. You guys are outrageous. You guys are outrageous. This is disgusting. You guys, I've never seen such gross violence. Tibet. Buddhists from Tibet. Unbelievable. Free Tibet. Free Tibet. It's all right. 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 I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen anything like this. I can't believe all these clubs for Buddhists. Shame. Shame. What a shame. You guys are gross. You guys are gross. Office Avenue. Serrano and started all of this. You're crazy, out of control cops. Serrano and Delgado especially. You guys are so gross.
And that disturbing video, my friends, is posted up on YouTube under the heading U.S. Cops Beat the Living Shit Out of Tibetan Protesters. Moving to The Guardian once again. Trial scheme to breathalyze children. Children could be breathalyzed under radical new plans to tackle underage drinking. Police officers will also use test strips to see if soft drinks have been mixed with alcohol. Under the new plans, which are to be piloted in North Wales, teenagers could be stopped in the street and tested for alcohol. Teens who are found with alcohol or who have failed the test will be taken home to their parents. If we move to the AP, I don't know if you remember back in January, a man named Michael Gorby of Rapidan, Virginia, attacked the Capitol. But basically, this news story is that the U.S. Capitol gunman had a bomb. Authorities revealed Tuesday that a man carrying a loaded shotgun was arrested in January near the U.S. Capitol, had explosives left in his truck nearby, and they went undetected for 3 weeks. So basically, they caught the guy, impounded his truck, and it sat under federal control. Meanwhile, for 3 weeks, it had explosives in it. Way to go, Homeland Stupidity. WashingtonPost.com has an important story. FDIC plans staff boost for bank failures. They're basically girding for the coming collapse, my friends. If we jump to the Boston Globe, Boston.com, our man Michael Moore got off. Court says Moore did not defame Iraq War veteran with documentary. A federal appeals court has ruled filmmaker Michael Moore did not defame an Iraq War veteran when Moore used a clip from a television interview without his permission in the anti-war documentary Fahrenheit 9/11. Army Sergeant Peter Damon, who lost his arms when a tire on a Black Hawk helicopter exploded while he and another reservist were servicing it, claimed he was humiliated and emotionally distressed after Moore included a clip from a TV interview in his scathing 2004 documentary criticizing the Bush administration and the war in Iraq. Jumping again to globalresearch.ca, an article by Richard Cook asked the question, is an international financial conspiracy driving world events? Was Alan Greenspan really as dumb as he looks in creating the late housing bubble that threatens to bring the entire Western debt-based economy crashing down? Was something as easy to foresee as this really the trigger for a meltdown that could destroy the world's financial system, or was it done perhaps accidentally on purpose? And if so, why? And the article is an international financial conspiracy driving world events goes into, of course, the Bilderberg Group and the Rockefellers. Another big time celebrity and artist comes out for 9/11 Truth, Margaret Cho. About 2 weeks ago, again on the Alex Jones Show, top comedian believes in 9/11 conspiracy. Top comedian and actress Margaret Cho has joined Willie Nelson and Charlie Sheen and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds more in questioning the official 9/11 story, stating that the public were going to become very angry when they realized there was a conspiracy behind the attacks. And you can actually listen to that whole interview if you hit up that link. If we jump to the Wichita Eagle, Patriot Act used in drug case, and of course that's only going to happen more and more. Another one from globalresearch.ca, GMO and Morgellons disease. We of course have gone over Morgellons disease a little bit before. This article is raising new connections perhaps between genetically modified foods and Morgellons disease, and that article is by Barbara Peterson up on Global Research. Norman Solomon has one up on consortiumnews.com. NPR, National Pentagon Radio? And the editor's note says, there was a time when PBS and NPR had a much deeper commitment to the public good, taking on difficult or controversial topics like apartheid in South Africa or the Iran-Contra lawlessness of the Reagan years when the corporate news media shied away. But a sustained right-wing strategy to pressure their government subsidies has had a telling effect, as PBS and NPR serve up thinner and thinner journalistic gruel more to the liking of the powers that be. So in this guest essay, media critic Norman Solomon observes this tedious pattern at NPR. If we jump to WVEC.com, of course, we can't go a week without talking about the phony terror drills that are designed to make you think that terrorism is real and that Al-Qaeda wants to send anthrax to some Midwestern college. But Mike Gooding has an article up on WVEC.com, Exercise Test Communication in Event of Domestic Crisis. Yet again, I believe we're mentioning the Fort Monroe drill that happened in Virginia. If we jump to Time and Robert Burns writing for the AP, new CENTCOM chief sworn in. Of course, William Fallon has fallen his sword. One of the Army's most Iraq-savvy generals is taking charge, at least temporarily, of arguably the most important command in the U.S. military with responsibility for the clusterfucks in Iraq and Afghanistan. In a ceremony two Fridays ago at MacDill Air Force Base in Florida, Lieutenant General Martin Dempsey is to assume command of U.S. CENTCOM from Navy Admiral, who announced unexpectedly on March 11th that he was quitting. Fallon cited press reports that he was at odds with President Bush over Iran policy. Hitting up our own Oregonian up on OregonLive.com, and fortunately Jeff Manning at the Oregonian did a little bit of work and has an article called Chase Mortgage Memo Pushes, quote, Cheats and Tricks. A newly surfaced memo from banking giant J.P. Morgan Chase provides a rare glimpse into the mentality that fueled the mortgage crisis. The memo's title says it all, Zippy Cheats and Tricks. It's a primer on how to get risky mortgage loans approved by Zippy, Chase's in-house automated loan underwriting system. The secret to approval? Inflate the borrower's income or otherwise falsify their loan application. The document, a copy of which was obtained by the Oregonian, bears a Chase corporate logo, but it's unclear how widely it was circulated or used within Chase. Now, of course, that the stink is out, they'll say not at all. There's a clip up on YouTube, The Case for Controlled Demolition, a clip from the film Improbable Collapse, improbablecollapse.com, and in that clip that I have a link to, retired public defender William Veale, V-E-A-L-E, presents a concise summary of some of the evidence behind the controlled demolition hypothesis of the complete collapse of World Trade Center buildings 1, 2, and 7. If we jump to gizmag.com, Global Hawk, UAV. This is our second mention of unmanned aerial vehicles. Global Hawk UAV achieves record 33-hour flight, and of course, more police state homeland security work brought by our friends at Northrop Grumman. If we jump to tech.co.uk, RFID credit card hacked. Of course, we've been going over that for now going on a couple years on MediaMonarchy.com. The RFIDs that they're trying to sell you on being more safe and more secure are totally hackable by people who enjoy hacking things. If we jump to the Raise the Hammer blog, this is just a nice catchy headline. If we trek back to the 5th anniversary protests of the Iraq War, and of course there were some 150 people arrested, Hammerblog has an article, Wrong People Arrested on Iraq War Anniversary. Unfortunately, the people who orchestrated and launched the war have yet to be apprehended. Speaking of the fusion centers yet again, there's again one from Wired and my friends at BlacklistedNews.com talking about National Fusion Center Conference and the fusion centers and the coming snitch nanny police state. I should have chucked this one up all the way to the beginning, but it came out a week or two ago by Gary Young, but it's up on guardian.co.uk. America lauds Martin Luther King, but undermines his legacy every day. NationalPost.com. This is the one, you know, the whole blonde hair, blue eyed Western Al Qaeda. They're everywhere. Oh my God, they're under my bed. Oh, okay, no, they're not. Al Qaeda recruits Western fighters, says the cocaine importation agency, CIA. Al Qaeda is training fighters that, quote, look Western and could easily cross U.S. borders without attracting attention, CIA Director Michael, there is no Fourth Amendment, Hayden. If we jump again to Raw Story and Blacklisted News, oh, this is a good one. I do have a clip for this, my friends. This is, what's Schadenfreude, Shameful Joy? It's funny, but oh.
There's the president, the 43rd president of the United States, George W. Bush. He will be throwing the first pitch out to Manny Acton. And here's the announcement by Jerome Haruska.
Manager of the Washington Nationals, Manny Acton. And managing principal owner of the Washington Nationals, Ted Lerner. And here to throw out the inaugural pitch at Nationals Park to mark a new era of Washington baseball, the President of the United States.
Presidents who have thrown out first pitches, but I don't know that anybody's ever done it better than this particular president.
That was some heat.
Aye. And usually they go to the front of the mound in these ceremonial first pitches, presidents or otherwise. He goes right up on the mound again, just as we saw him at the World Series at Yankee Stadium in 2001, soon after September 11th.
He, of course, has to mention, I don't think anybody's ever done that better. And he has to mention, of course, 9/11. Press TV has U.S. to step up pre-election security. That's, of course, Michael Chertoff yet again. Defense-update.com has something about Landroid robots and their support communications in urban combat. Of course, coming to an urban town center near you. Tim Ryan has an article up on Counterpunch. Stratcom rules, or the next war will start in Nebraska. And that's basically talking about U.S. Stratcom and shock and awe, and it's basically all comes from rocky, mountainous bases hidden away in the United States. NationalExpositor.com has MTV warns of looming police state. They have a couple videos that are ostensibly about, you know, tolerance and remember the Holocaust and important things like that. However, it's basically showing average people like you and me riding the bus or sitting at home and being arrested by Nazi thugs, Homeland Security style. Another one, and I'm running out of time. I don't have time to play too many more of my clips, but another tough acceptance was for Turd Blossom, Karl Rove. Not an easy 40K for Turd Blossom. He had an informal interview process and a little bit going on at the University of Iowa. This was going back Sunday, March 10th, and basically he was shouted down and people called him a war criminal and a liar and many other things, and it's kind of entertaining to watch. Another one that's kind of strange is, you know, Bush singing Farewell Tune at the Gridiron Club, the Gridiron Club of Washington Journalists. They sing a little song, changing the tune. Actually, yeah, let's check it out.
I spend my days with a grin brush. I clear my head of all the fuss. Like a fuss you made over Harriet and Brownie. Scooter, finally free of the prosecutor. And then I wake and look around me at the oval walls that surround me, and I realize I was only dreaming. For there's Condi and Dick, my old compadre talking to me about some oil-rich Saudi. But soon I'll touch the brown, brown grass of home. Yes, you're all gonna miss me the way you used to quiz me.
But soon I'll touch the brown.
That's funny and sad and interesting for all kinds of different reasons. They're changing the tune, or rather changing the words to a tune called The Green, Green Grass of Home. And of course they change it to The Brown, Brown Grass of Home. I think because, of course, everything the Bush crime family touches turns to death and brown destruction. Trucking forward quickly, riots, hoarding, and panic, the sign of things to come. Coming food riots being reported on by the Times Online out of the UK. Raw story yet again has Microsoft and Google, of course, in bed with the NSA and spying. Jerome Corsi has an article up on WorldNet Daily, and of course exposing the new PR campaign for North American Union and finding internal memos from Canada's Foreign Affairs and Internal Trade Ministry, and you can read about that. We also, as we mentioned, Alex Ansari's A Glimpse into the Wilderness Awareness School. That's about an hour and a half video for you to check out. There's another video about Cyberstorm. A Cyberstorm vendor was hacked in an attack on gamers. The Cyberstorm Homeland Security drill, of course, happening a few weeks ago. Fox News has State Department. Anti-Zionism is the new anti-Semitism. And, of course, saying that if you oppose the apartheid criminal actions of the government of Israel, that, of course, means that you're an anti-Semite. The London Independent has British teachers told to rewrite Iraq invasion history. We also have NSA, of course, rebuilds total information awareness. Call it TIA, call it Echelon, call it whatever you want. They spy on everything. Danger Room has a bit about the Air Force, and their new slogan is Above All. The Air Force's new slogan, Above All, sounds pretty cool. Until you translate it into German, then it gets downright creepy, like Hitler creepy, and of course, Above All translates to Uber Alice. Too bad they can't use Dead Kennedy's California Uber Alice. There's a link, and you can watch a little commercial for the United States Air Force and their new slogan, Above All. Alternet has a lengthy, lengthy article exposing the Reverend Sun Myung-moon. And it's a big excerpt from John Gornfeld's new book, Bad Moon Rising, How Reverend Moon Created the Washington Times, Seduced the Religious Right, and Built an American Kingdom. And there's a funny little video of him somewhere in D.C., but basically he starts ranting about sex and saying that no one can oppose me. And it's kind of bizarre. Michelle Chusadovsky has an article up on, of course, globalresearch.ca, the deployment of U.S. troops inside Canada. And, of course, we reported on this before. NORTHCOM and Canada, they're in bed together. They signed the agreement on Valentine's Day. They told you about it much later. Lee Rogers at roguegovernment.com has an article called The Federal Reserve is Destroying America, and it is. Rottencheese.blogspot.com mentions that Bernanke saves Bear Stearns while Americans live in tents. Think Progress has Bush appointing new Homeland Security advisor. He's appointing Kenneth Weinstein to be his new Homeland Security advisor, replacing Frances Fragos Townsend, who we went over, of course, when she abruptly resigned, once she, of course, put in her secret contingency plan, which I'm sure we'll find out later what that is. There's also some older interviews from the war protests. RFID technology keeps track of school bus riders. NPR asks the musical question, do street protests still work? And finally, from roguegovernment.com, Pioneer Press, man defecates in Homeland Security office. And they don't know who it is or how it happened, but I think it's poetically fitting. That, my friends, was the March Clearinghouse. That took forever. And now I'm going to have to blaze through this last little bit because we only have a few minutes left. So, Danger Room once again, And there's lots of copious sourcing that they're doing this, and you know they're doing it. Military Report, they want to secretly recruit or hire bloggers, of course, to be CENTCOM agents spouting the lies of Homeland Security. And there's a lot of articles to go along with this. Of course, we've had the controversies lately about the Air Force blocking access or the ability to let people blog, and some generals say yes and some say no. And that's been going on for a bit, and you can hit some of the links from the Joint Special Operations University and all the Homeland Security Military Industrial Complex facilities this all swirls around. Steve Watson has an article, CIA and Google team up again for more spying. Of course, San Francisco Chronicle reports it, and it's been out before, and the Wall Street Journal knows it. And there's also a new site set up called Intellipedia, and that's basically the intelligence agency's Wikipedia. And you can click over to that, and they even have a news story about how there's news about Intellipedia. And they're saying, what's the big fucking deal? And if we flash back to June 11th, 2007, Google ranked worst on privacy from the BBC, so we went over this almost a year ago on Media Monarchy. Google has the worst privacy record of popular net firms, says Privacy International. Jumping to the AFP, Syria says they're ready in case of U.S. military action. And Saudi Arabia, quote, braces for nuclear war. We went over this a little bit last week. Of course, Dick Cheney made the rounds over in the Middle East, and now everyone's going, okay, dude, you better get the fuck ready. So we'll see, my friends. IsraelForum.org is reporting it. Saudis prepare for sudden nuclear hazards. Again, this was right after Cheney left. They all of a sudden prepared for sudden nuclear hazards. If we hit up Newsday.com, an 80-year-old wheelchair-bound church deacon was arrested at a mall in upstate New York for having an anti-war shirt. John Cusack appeared on Real Time with Bill Maher to discuss his new anti-war movie, not his previous anti-war movie called Grace is Gone, which we covered on Media Monarchy. A few months ago, his new one is called War, Inc. And you can watch that whole video and you can read about it in the film, I believe, is going to come out, May 23rd, 2008, War, Inc., John Cusack. Oh, I wish I could have spent more time on this now that I'm rushing through everything. FBI focusing on about four suspects in the 2001 anthrax attacks. This is coming March 28th from our buddies at Fox News. The FBI has narrowed its focus to about four suspects in the 6.5-year investigation of the deadly anthrax attacks of 2001, and at least three of those suspects are linked to the Army's bioweapons research facility at Fort Detrick in Maryland, Fox News has learned. Well, Fox News, you could have learned it years ago, because everyone from WhatReallyHappened.com to a U.S. government biological weapons legislator, Francis Boyle, and tons and tons and tons of other people know that it's Philip Zack from Fort Detrick. That's the anthrax attack. You can hit up commondreams.org all the way back January 20th, 2002. Anthrax missing from Army Lab. That's coming from the Hartford Courant. And like I said, hit up whatreallyhappened.com and you can read all about the 9/11 and anthrax frame-up. My friends at the DEA, who love to visit MediaMonarchy.com every week, they have a problem because there's a new scathing report from Inspector General Glenn A. Fine that said that the DEA can't keep track of their laptops and weapons. And so I posted it up under the headline, "Only Users Lose Guns and Laptops." So sorry, friends at DEA, big fans of MediaMonarchy.com. ABC News has, "Is that a gun in your wastebasket, or are you just happy to see me?" And they also have, "DEA needs to secure laptops." And again, ABC has, "Gun computer losses plague the DEA," and there's lots of PDFs for you to download, the full Inspector General's report. If we jump to the UPI yet again, U.S. spy agency, the NGA, seeks data on the power grid. The agency that manages data from U.S. spy satellites is exploring ways to map the nation's entire electric grid as part of efforts to protect infrastructure. No, they're setting up the GIG, Global Information Grid. Google it. But this is being done by the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, the NGA. Be afraid. And actually, that came to my attention from the man, Greg Nixon, at dailydoseofterror.blogspot.com. And quickly moving forward, oh, of course, Microsoft and the NGA announced a strategic alliance back in May 11th, 2006. You can, of course, read about that. Treasury's plan. This is what I saw on the cover of the New York Times early in the morning on March 29th. Treasury's plan would give the Fed wide new power. And of course, as the days went by, we did learn more about this. And Hank Paulson and all these guys, they basically want to control Wall Street. They want to completely subsume it as if they haven't already completely consumed it. The Treasury Department will propose on Monday that Congress give the Federal Reserve broad new authority to oversee financial market stability, in effect allowing it to send SWAT teams into any corner of the industry or any institution that might pose a risk to the overall system. And now, my friends, is one last important report. This is coming from ONN, and this is Al-Qaeda saying that these 9/11 conspiracy theories are ridiculous.
A new book called The Truth About September 11th claims to present evidence that the destruction of the World Trade Center was not the work of terrorists, but was in fact perpetrated by the U.S. government. With us, the much maligned book's author, William Gerard.
Most of the mainstream media, they're just too afraid to even have me on, so thank you.
Also joining us is Omar Al-Farouk of Al-Qaeda. He's an outspoken critic of what he calls Gerard's 9/11 conspiracy theories.
Yes, Michael, I assure you, that is all this book is complete nonsense.
Mr. Gerard, how did you arrive at the conclusions in your book? Where are the facts?
Well, through
here?
Scientific examination of Ground Zero. For example, the melted core.
I mean, oh,
that was
here
definitely
we go.
Evidence that there were thermite bombs. That were used to bring down those buildings.
I can assure you, we did not use thermite bombs. I did the research myself. It would not have worked. We flew an enormous airplane into a building. Okay, I think it is obvious what caused the building to crumble.
Why
it
are
is...
you being so closed-minded to this, sir? If more
How
people
would you
just
like
have the courage...
it? If you spent, you know, 2 months in a mountain cave, sleeping on rocks, planning something really special, only to have someone take the credit away from you.
More
say, oh no, you don't
the
deserve the credit.
To open
for
up their minds,
Mr. Gerard. Mr. Gerard. Why in the world would the U.S. government want to stage this attack on their own soil?
Greed, of course. And to increase the oil revenues, the weapons industry, and security industry. And these are all things that Bush and his puppet master Cheney, they've got their stakes in.
Bush's administration, they're a den of jackals. We certainly have common ground there. Well, but what does not follow is why would
it
they kill...
follow.
Why would they kill 3,000 of their own infidels?
Well, of course, because why, you think about it. It was all part
they,
of their plan to build a case for the war in
he
Iraq.
He was so smart
think
to plan
it.
All of this. Why is his approval rating you know, in El Haman, and why is Osama bin Laden safe in somewhere?
Yes, the Iraq war has done serious damage to the Bush administration.
Here, look. I have names, phone numbers, everyone involved in this.
You gotta be kidding.
Okay?
Names and phone numbers.
I have here the voucher for the lessons, for the flight lessons.
This is obviously forced documents. I mean, come on, did President Bush give you these himself?
I work for Bush.
Most
me and Bush, we go out, we hang. He goes, hey, bring
Cheney
on the forgery.
It
is rubbish.
Talking
to you is like talking to a girl.
This is the kind of thing our government does.
Let Mr. Farouk of Al-Qaeda speak.
I have a suggestion for you. Why don't you go to the Washington Monument? Take the family. Let's say October 12th, 2009, around 3:04. Take a guided tour to the top and just wait there. I think you will see that Al-Qaeda is very good at organizing things.
Gentlemen, thank you.
That's a good way to end the 70th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. That was actually from The Onion, casting a light on actually the whole ridiculousness of the whole 9/11 super event. And like I said, that is going to do it for this episode. Coming to you April 4th, 2008, and actually coming to you from my apartment in Portland, Oregon. I had some technical difficulties at the Portland Radio Authority, but that's not going to stop me. But still, the show comes to you from praradio.org, and of course, my friends at revereradio.info. Please hit me up on MySpace, Dig, YouTube, and Yahoo with Media Monarchy as your keyword. And of course, get the podcast radioforall.net and archive.org. As I finish off each episode, I keep track of some of the strange people that visit the site and how they get there each week. Last week, we had the U.S. Department of Commerce in Falls Church. They Googled National Reconnaissance Office power grid information. The Globe and Mail Googled Project Triple Crown Clear Channel. The Croatian Ministry of Defense Googled military brand. The DEA was on the site twice. The Seattle Public Library was on MediaMonarchy.com after Googling spy satellite. NYU was there after Googling global biometric database. The CDC themselves, the Centers for Disease Creation, Control, landed on MediaMonarchy.com after they Googled who are the four anthrax suspects. And that's one of those kind of things, my friends, that fills me with a sense of, hey, I may be able to actually help change something. If some average person at the CDC says, yeah, what the fuck is up with that anthrax thing? They can land on MediaMonarchy.com, they can read some of the links, and it can maybe open and expand and destroy their paradigm. South Texas Community College Googled brainwashing used in video games by the Army, and it is. The National Institutes of Health, the NIH, was reading about the article from a few months ago about scientists that said that the human race is going to split into two different species, of course the beautiful elite, and the Morlocks, basically. BMW Manufacturing Googled firefighter Freemasons, and finally the Ministry of Social Development in New Zealand Googled Seamus Coogan Kennedys, and that, of course, we went over previously on the show about Seamus Coogan and his new documentary from New Zealand, Imagining the Kennedys. And so, my friend, thanks for bearing with me on this 70th episode. I don't quite have my mojo when I'm sitting at home. I don't have quite the, you know, the live vibe of it. But I still did it for you, and I did it in real time. I only hit pause once and peed and smoked a cigarette. But then I came back, and you won't even know when it happened. So, my friends, I love you. Thanks for listening. Please come back next week. Like my man Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.